And we are joined, I believe, by Stephen Gowans of What's Left. Are you there, Stephen?
I am. Hello, Phil.
Hi, how you doing? And we have been, we were speaking earlier with someone who was at a demonstration in Montreal, and we were noting that in their slogans raised there, there's much more focus on the right of Palestinians to self-determination and on the issue of occupation and on the issue of the blockade of Gaza. Now, you take this up very well in your article. You've written two recently, and people should go to the site, whatsleft.com, I assume. Is it
Gowans.wordpress.com.
Gowans.wordpress.com. Although the other will probably get you. Internet's very efficient. Even I can say it wrong, and people still go and find the article. You take us back to the issue of colonialism and how we came to find ourselves in this situation where you have two peoples and one piece of real estate and how it was to be distributed. Could you kind of talk about how you introduced this subject and how you think people might come to get a clearer picture?
Well, I mean, it's often, certainly in the media treats these kinds of conflicts as if they are happened 6 days ago, but they didn't happen 6 days ago or 6 weeks ago or 6 months ago. This one has been going on for six decades. And unless you understand the context and the background, it's difficult to understand the conflict as it's being expressed today. And what you don't understand is the reactions of Hamas or why Hamas exists and why there are resistance organizations in Palestine and what it is that they're trying to accomplish. As far as anyone could tell, if they simply relied on newspapers, there's a bunch of Palestinians who for some reason like firing rockets at Israeli cities, presumably because they don't like Jews. I mean, that's the kind of impression you get from the press coverage. But it's not explained that Israel is a settler or kind of a colonial state. It's a state based on settling on a particular piece of land on Palestine, which came under British control, which it seized from the King Ottoman Empire, and then took this land, which was predominantly inhabited by Arabs, and promised it to the Jews as a homeland. The British had a mandate to govern Palestine. After the war, they discovered they didn't have the resources or the strength to be able to maintain the mandate, and so gave the issue to the UN. And the UN decided to divide Palestine between a Jewish state and an Arab state. But the interesting thing is that the Arabs made up a majority of the Palestinian population. They were two-thirds of the population. The Jewish settlers, most of whom had arrived after World War I, owned 6% of the land and made up one-third of the population. But the UN, over the vehement objections of the Arabs who lived there, decided to grant 56% of the territory and the best land to a Jewish state and 42% of the land to the Arabs. Now, they could have decided simply to create a unitary democratic state in which all people had equal rights, regardless of their national origin or their ethnic background, but they decided on a division.
Steve, can I ask you, by the way, out of the blue, was that even considered? Did anybody propose that?
It was considered, and it was rejected, unfortunately.
Would you say that was a foregone thing, or there was actually some substantial question about whether that would be the way to do it?
No, I believe that there was some serious consideration of that as a possible alternative.
Now, Albert Einstein was a believer in that, right? He advocated very strongly, together with others who considered themselves Zionists, but they said, look, we have to have a democratic state.
yes, a democratic state in which all have equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And one, yes. Instead, however, that's not the way it worked out. And the result was that by May 15th, 1948, when Israel was declared as a state, through war and ethnic cleansing, the Zionists had managed to conquer 80% of Palestine for the Jewish settlers, which is even more than envisaged in the UN partition plan.
Mm-hmm.
And this resulted in 700,000 Arab, or 700,000 Arabs who were expelled, who were exiled, or who fled from the fighting, and weren't permitted to return to their homes. And they now make up or ballooned into a exile and diaspora community of about 5 million. Many leading lives, I mean, 66 years after the fact of forced idleness in teeming refugee camps in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's the root of this conflict. We have this conflict flaring up every once in a while, but essentially it's a colonial war. You have a settler state, Israel, that's waging a permanent colonial war against the Arab people who had been dispossessed of their land and territory.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans, gowans.blogspot.com. And Gaza, by the way, is a special twist, has a twist to it, doesn't it? Because that was for a period under, it was Egyptian.
Yes.
Or Egyptian responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
How did that fit into this? And Egypt, by the way, is a player here because they, now we have had a coup, it's called an election, which seems to be a coup, and the present government in Cairo probably competes with Tel Aviv in terms of dislike for the political leadership in Gaza.
Yes. That's true, because the political leadership in Gaza is Hamas. Hamas comes from the Muslim Brotherhood. And, of course, the current government in Egypt is vehemently opposed to the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, the previous government in Gaza was, I mean, the president, Morsi, was from the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Egypt is as opposed to the Hamas leadership in Gaza as Israel is.
Yeah. And on the democratic matter, and this strikes me as one of the places I don't understand why we don't ask more about the posture of Washington and Ottawa and others. There was an election. There's been more than one. Hamas has been elected.
Yes.
And everyone sort of was comfortable with the idea that, well, even though the people voted for them, that's okay if somebody else decides to exercise authority over them and take the power away. That would be the Palestinian Authority. And they went through a bloody fight with each other, and now they've struck an agreement with each other.
Uh-huh.
So why wouldn't that be regarded as, okay, we're making progress? The Palestinian Authority, led by Mr. Abbas, I think, he has a shaky alliance with people who had been labeled all these things, but still were the elected leaders.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, in 2006, when Hamas was elected in the Palestinian elections, at the time when Bush was pushing his program of democracy in the Middle East, and Hamas won, and then people in Washington said, who is the idiot who came up with this idea of promoting democracy? Because, I mean, if you have democracy, you have Hamas. We can't have Hamas. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, the United States, and the EU immediately imposed the blockade on Gaza and immediately set out...
As punishment for their electing somebody.
Exactly. which is a form of terrorism, if you think about it. I mean, because the objective is to increase the misery of the population, to make them fed up with the government they've elected, to try and induce them to get rid of that government. But ever since 2006, that has been the goal of the Israeli government, which is to degrade, undermine Hamas in various ways. And this entire conflict that has, or this new eruption of this Israeli colonial aggression, is really an expression of the more immediate objective of destroying Hamas.
And which, by the way, the New York Times, I think today, has an op-ed piece saying doing exactly that. Save the Palestinians by destroying Hamas, or save Gaza by wiping out Hamas. And of course, I noticed you cited this professor in California, that Assad Abu Khalil, who makes that point. He says this policy is the only way that Hamas has become so popular. Idea, as you point out, of terror against democracy only reinforces the power and authority of Hamas.
Yes, it does. I mean, there is Palestinian people are they do support resistance organizing. They're supporting Hamas because Hamas is resisting the Israeli aggression, unlike the Palestinian Authority or Fatah led by Abbas. Mm-hmm. Which they regard as kind of collaborators.
Well, it does get its checks from the United States via Israel, right? It pays its apparatchiks with U.S. money that has to be vetted by Israel. Am I right?
Well, that's true. It does get its checks from exactly.
You're the employee of an employee.
That is when it's not being punished for its unity agreement with Hamas.
Yeah, the checks are sometimes held up.
That's true. I mean, but healing that rift, the healing of the rift between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority kind of gives Hamas some legitimacy again, and that was a red flag for Israel, and that's one of the reasons why they undertook this new campaign to undermine Hamas. And, I mean, it's not only the bombing of Gaza. I mean, and if you recall, there were these negotiations between Abbas and Israel. It was supposed to lead to discussions about the two-state solution. And you may recall that Israel was not holding up its end of the bargain. It was supposed to release prisoners, and they said, no, we're not going to do that. They're not supposed to build new settlements. They said, we're going to build new settlements anyway. And it was that drove the Palestinian Authority to try to heal its rift with Hamas. But once it did...
Then they get bombed.
Well, then immediately what Israel does is they cut off the monthly tax revenue it collects on the authorities' behalf. Then they say, we're going to build 1,500 new housing units in Jewish settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And they say, this is retaliation for the creation of this unity government. And then, on June 11th is one day before the three Israeli youths were abducted. On that day, Israel decides that it's going to launch an airstrike in Gaza. And contrary to the ceasefire agreement it had with Hamas from...
A day prior to that.
Well,
and how do we know that? They made an announcement or they did it? What exactly are you referring to?
Well, they had... We had the operation in November 2012 when there was the air war again.
Was that Pillar of Cloud?
Yeah.
That's the worst named operation in history. What the hell are they referring to?
Well, so they had the ceasefire. And what happened on June 11th was that Israel violated the ceasefire. And they said, well, we have to do that because we're taking out a Hamas police officer who's been involved in numerous attacks.
A drone operation.
So they violate that ceasefire, and they blame it on Hamas. Well, you know, we have to take out this Hamas operative. And then on June 12th, that's when you have that abduction of the three youths, which is attributed to Hamas. Hamas says, we didn't do it. They said, we like the idea because, you know, if someone did it, what we can do is we can use those youths as bargaining chips to... as for the release of Palestinian political prisoners in Israeli jails. But if they actually did it, you would think they would say, we have these people. now we're going to bargain with you. Because they did that before with Gilad Shalit, the Israeli soldier.
It's kind of hard to make the thing work if you don't have the hostage.
Right. But that's just simply being used as a pretext by Israel to launch an offensive within the West Bank. And you recall in that offensive, there were hundreds of Palestinians who were abducted by Israel, including most of the Hamas leadership in the West Bank.
Yeah, by the way, Yuri Avneri emphasized this in Counterpunch over the weekend. He said, when he was talking about how to solve this, he said that you can't rearrest people that you promised to release. He says, that's bad faith. You made a deal, you have to stand by it.
Oh, and they did that. They arrested.
It was basically a double cross.
75 people that they had released in that previous or prisoner release exchange, and then recharged them.
Mm-hmm.
With offenses. Plus, of course, they destroyed a lot of buildings, and mm-hmm. but they usually do.
Yes, which, by the way, they also formally resuming the practice. They had said they would stop that. Now they're resuming destruction of homes as part of this operation. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans. What's left is his site, and it's gowans.blogspot.com. And I want to use, again, the site Yuri Avneri's. He raised a point which I know certainly complements the pieces that you've been writing, because he says, he points at the colonial character of this and says that... unfortunately, I'm looking for the quotes. Well, let me take it. I'll find it here, and then I'll come back to it. He said, "Why aren't we just talking to one another?" He said, it's very simple. He said, "We have a situation. We have violent people on both sides who claim there's no the other side is not willing." Blah blah. He says, but then the trick is they go to mediators. He said, why are we involved with mediators? Why don't we just talk? And then he gives an answer to his own question. He says, Henry Kissinger laid down the law that the U.S. would mediate and the parties were not to talk to each other. And he raises that, it seems to me, a very nice rhetorical way. It kind of exposes things. But now we're talking about who the boss is. And aren't we then all of our, you know, everybody wants to get angry. Oh, I'm angry at Hamas. I'm angry with Israel. I'm angry with Netanyahu. However, when it all turns, well, it's going to be Kerry and Obama. Forget Kerry. I'm sorry I mentioned the name. It's going to be Obama. Well, then why isn't that where this talk starts? This is not a mediator that, in fact, is trying to mediate. He's trying to manipulate. Am I right?
Well, he's trying to manipulate, obviously, and Israel is a client state of the United States.
And they can't talk to each other. They mustn't do that.
Well, the other interesting thing is, who are the parties in the conflict? Israel and Hamas. Did you notice that no one ever speaks to Hamas? If you were to speak to Hamas, that would make them legitimate. And so instead they go through Turkey and Qatar.
Yes. I notice that they're looking for a Qatar solution. You say if there's a bankrupt outfit that is, you know, a year ago, the emir was in Gaza. And then he got all excited about bombing Syria, and he couldn't wait. He was just, you know, kind of dining out on Syria. And that didn't go so good. And so then he got removed.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to be taking this little handful of people they call a country and making them the host of the solution of the problem.
Yes.
And you're right. Nobody talks to Hamas itself. It always has to have all these other curious personalities who seem to have more money than brains who get in the middle of it.
Yes. I mean, what was amusing is to see pictures of Kerry with the president of the Palestinian Authority. Well, why were you talking to him? I mean... Yeah. He didn't really have much to do with it. You should be talking to Hamas. But you can't talk to Hamas because then that would make it a legitimate organization.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was also that absurdity in which we had the Egyptian peace proposal or ceasefire proposal in which no one consulted Hamas.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. By the way, I mean, that was where the parties here jumped in, and Mulcair and one of the Trudeaus and Harper all said that Israel had the right to defend itself and that you couldn't. And they also agreed that Hamas is terrorist, and yet they therefore were locked in. We have no. They don't permit us any options.
Yeah.
Let's go to this matter. Why, if the U.S. was serious, I mean, why the party that seems to me should be focused on, and your writing brings to light, we're talking about an imperialist system, previously dominated by the British, now dominated by the Americans, and a colonial system, and indeed a neo-colonial system. And when they talk about, oh, we'd like to have some peace, well, your article indicates you've armed one side to the point where it's almost sinking into the ground under the weight of the weapons it's got. Obviously, all you have to do is stop providing them.
That's right. I mean, and Israel isn't motivated to find any kind of solution or accommodation with the Palestinian Arabs. I mean, why should they? Because they have enormous strength. They have the diplomatic backing of the United States. The United States can veto any UN Security Council resolution against Israel. And it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't bargain in good faith with the Palestinians.
There was a moment in history which was quite shocking when the British and the French and the Israelis attacked Egypt, and a phone call came in from Dwight Eisenhower, President of the United States, and he said, stop. And what do you know? Everybody stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So what we understand, Obama's pretending, oh, I can't do anything. Of course he could. All he has to do is say what he wants. He doesn't want that. He seems to want what he's got.
He does, and what they want is the continued war of aggression against the Palestinians, or hoping that one day the Palestinians will just give up.
Mm-hmm. Disappear into the desert or something.
And I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and your voice, and again, this is Stephen Gowans, gowans.blogspot.com. You've joined and clearly make the argument that the two-state thing is just a phantom. It's not a solution. It is not in reality going to happen, and nobody actually wants it to happen. That the proper demand is for a democratic state shared by the people who live there.
Yes, and why wouldn't one want that? I mean, why would one want
Based on our so-called Western principles, what else could we, to be rational about it, what else can we actually ask for?
That's right. And at this point, if we're talking about a Palestinian state, we're talking about a Palestinian state on about 10% of the land from which Palestinians have been dispossessed. And the latest polling figures show that most Palestinians don't want that. What they want is recovery of historic Palestine from, you know, the River Jordan to the Mediterranean, or a democratic state.
Mm-hmm.
And they also say if it happens that a two-state solution is negotiated, and it doesn't look like one is going to be, but even if there was one, we need to continue to fight for recovery of all of Palestine and the mm-hmm. establishment of a single unitary state.
Mm-hmm. Which would be a democratic state in which it would reflecting the will of the people.
Yes, of the majority,
mm-hmm.
certainly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure, you know, exactly what the views of Palestinian Arabs are beyond that. There's some argument that maybe they wouldn't accept all the Israeli citizens who live in Palestine today. And some say, well, that's the kind of reality that they're going to have to accept because it's unreasonable to expect them all to go away.
Mm-hmm. By the way, when these things are settled, the reasonable people are usually in a minority, right? And they have to resume the struggle to be reasonable.
Yeah.
That's a heavy lifting. We better make sure we tell people the second article I forgot to mention. We're on this theme of Obama. He has power. He provides the weapons. And $3 billion, as your article points out, a year go to Israel so that they can be the superpower that they are. You say, as a result of the weapons provided by Obama and the support for the doctrine of Mr. Netanyahu, that then Obama is guilty of all the crimes in Gaza, and your reasoning is that's what Obama says about Putin.
Yeah, I mean, if we follow the same logic, just the other day, the White House press secretary is saying that Putin is responsible for the downing of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 because, they allege, Putin gave the Russians the missiles that were used. So he says, the Russians may have, Ukrainian rebels may have pulled the trigger, but all the same, it all goes back ultimately to Vladimir Putin. Well, by the same reasoning, then the massacre in Gaza all goes back to Obama.
You have goose their gander. That's brilliantly done, by the way. Stephen Gowans, we really appreciate talking to you, and we look forward to your next article.
Okay, thank you.
There you go. Bye-bye. Stephen Gowans. Gowans.blogspot.com. And I like to just say the name of his site, which is What's Left. It beats me. And we want to thank Robin Philpott telling us what's going on in Montreal. It's raining in Montreal, but there are the crowds are getting very large.
Well, I listened to his numbers. It had grown from 300 to 1,000 just in the time
while
he was
on the phone
with
us.
Yes. So, I mean, obviously, he was there at the early moments of the conversation.
Peace advocate, and you want to stop the attacks on Gaza. You got a competitor. It was happening all across the world.
Well, listen, hot news, which I just heard from Ruben Roth here. There were five separate demonstrations in San Francisco today, all in support of Gaza and the Gazans. You know,
shows how much the San Franciscan like each other. Well, I'm having one, but I'm not coming to yours. Okay.
Exactly.
This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor@CIUT.FM. We'll see you. Thanks very much, Andy. See you next week.